Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by Verrill-Law.com and CMAcareer.com. Today we have a great guest and we're going to be talking about a new book. We'll start with the book. The name is The Massachusetts Biotech Boom. The guest, Kevin O'Brien, author, and we're going to be talking a lot about him today and why he wrote this great book. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Glad to be here.
No, very glad to have you on the show. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure the HR audience is thinking to themselves, how is this going to relate to HR? And maybe you could give them a sneak peek as to why that is.
Sure. Many people are employed within the biotech industry, and we have quite a few as clients ourselves. So I wrote it because it is, so prevalent here in this area, Massachusetts especially. And I think there's some unique opportunities and risks within that industry, and it's such a big driver of our economy that I think it's great for people to understand the landscape if they're willing to or want to navigate it and seek out those opportunities and avoid and mitigate some of the risks along the way.
Well, part of what you have here is the Massachusetts Biotech Boom, a guide for executives and entrepreneurs. One of the Massachusetts has always been a hub for biotech, especially in the last 10, 20, 30 years. And so tell us a little bit about why you are able to talk about this. Tell us a little about your background. Tell us a little about, why you put this all together.
Sure. Yeah, I've been a certified financial planner and working in the financial services industry for over 30 years as a personal financial planner. And, I see the evolution of where we've been with high tech, transforming more so to the biotech industry in our state here in Massachusetts, and the risks of the biotech industry and the rewards are, I believe, quite unique. And you have the fact that only 10% of preclinical therapies actually become commercialized. You've got a lot of people working in these startup companies, and they've granted stock options or restricted stock, and it may not ever be worth anything. But in some instances, it could make them quite wealthy in a very short period of time. So, and then there's companies in between all that. So I've seen people do quite well personally with the industry, working within the industry, and I've seen people, not do so well. So, but it always seems like they can land on their feet. Even when a drug fails, I've seen companies go out of business overnight. And inevitably, the people that, lost their job from that company get another position quite quickly because it is so prevalent in this area. Helping people understand along their career track, when's a good time to be with a startup company? When is a good time to be with a more well-established big pharma or medical device company? And that could be, people that start out with the big pharma or medical device companies and they do well and they're well-established and they're kind of getting towards the end of their careers or middle to end, and they want to take a shot at a startup working for one of them. And if they're financially stable and sound and that new venture isn't going to jeopardize their future, it's a great time for them to try it out and see if they can, hit the big payday with an IPO or a licensing agreement with one of these startups. On the other hand, we could have clients who have been with the startups that haven't panned out, and they're getting, on in their career. Maybe it makes sense for them to go from the startup world to a more well-established, stable environment with the big pharma and medical device companies to kind of, you know, get something predictable and more consistent and kind of streamline their future goals and objectives with something that's more predictable. And, you know, and then there's people that have done quite well with the startups, and they have a lot of different choices they can make. But I think the reason why I wrote it and how we fit into that as financial service professionals, wealth managers, is helping these people along the way to capitalize on the opportunities and help them manage their equity compensation plans, because that is so prolific in the biotech and life sciences space. The equity compensation is quite a bit, quite a large part of their compensation plan. So we need to help them manage it and take some chips off the table periodically, if it's stock options or restricted shares, and helping them mitigate the tax hit and the, you know, risks that are inherent in that type of compensation.
Sure. We're talking with Kevin O'Brien. He's the author of The Massachusetts Biotech Boom. You know, in the book, right at the beginning, you talk about your background, and you talk about going to Merrimack College, and you give a story about your dad. Tell us about that story and what you learned from it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that was a major reason of why I do what I do. And so I witnessed my dad. He was a corporate accountant. He worked 28 years at a bookbinding company. They had their biggest account was with Reader's Digest. Some people might remember that. You know, good company. It served him well for 28 years. And he was dedicated, like a lot of people back then. You know, you work hard and stay with a company for your, you know, entire career, and then you get rewarded on the way out with, you know, maybe a pension and things like that. So, but however, my dad's situation was different. He worked 28 years as a corporate accountant, you know, closing the books at the end of the month, working on weekends. And 2 years prior to his retirement, this was back in, I think, 1974, and the company got bought by a company that actually manufactured steering wheels out in the Midwest. And they saw that company as just a cash opportunity. They bought what was called the Colonial Press, the bookbinding company, and immediately liquidated it. And 650 people were out of work. And it was before the ERISA laws that were established in 1975 to protect people's retirement plans. And so the retirement plan at my dad's company was like an asset on the books. And apparently it was happening quite often throughout the country, where these corporate raiders were coming in, they were buying these companies up and taking the retirement plan for themselves and liquidating it. And that's what happened to my dad and his coworkers. They lost their retirement plan, and it basically killed him. My dad passed 4 years after that, and it just crushed him. You know, he had dedicated his life to this company, worked hard, expected some financial reward in the end, and he was stripped of it, and it crushed him. And so that was had a huge impact on me. And I knew that as I went off to Merrimack College, my initial intent was to become a stockbroker. And as I took courses in investments, I also came across a course, you know, as I majored in finance, a course called risk management. And it was taught by a professor. He was a former financial advisor, and he had introduced us to a financial planning process. The content of the course, risk management, was about just that, mitigating risks pertinent to investments and just life events. So it educated us on investments like mutual funds, annuities, insurances, and basically how to mitigate the risks of major life events that can have an adverse financial impact on you. So as I took those courses, I could see that the gentleman who taught it, like I said, was a retired financial advisor, and he introduced us to the process that his company had adhered to And I liked that. I thought that was better than just pushing a stock as a stockbroker. And today we continue to approach things that way. We look at the big picture and the overall strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and risks that people are faced with in light of their personal finances. And so seeing my dad take that hit and then taking these courses, it was something, it just became apparent that that's what I could bring back to the area that I grew up in, and I figured it would help a lot of people. And, you know, over the past 30 years, we have seen, you know, the reward has been to see people have, you know, better peace of mind, confidence to make their decisions and secure their financial futures. And,
That's got to be very rewarding for you.
It is, yeah. So I've been able to see, you know, early on in my career, New England Electric and Digital Equipment Corp. These companies now, New England Electric is National Grid, and Digital is HP. And so those companies were offering early retirement plans, downsizing, reorganizing, and people were coming in to me with these early retirement packages that were about 3 or 4 inches thick of paper with a lot of legalese in them. And basically, kind of, you know, saying, here you go, this is what we're offering you to leave. And a lot of them weren't prepared. They were planning on working for another 5 years or more. So they'd come in with these packages, you know, just not knowing anything about what was in them, hardly, and wondering how they were going to move forward with their, you know, career or whether they could afford to retire. And it was really rewarding to be able to help them figure that out, you know, to help them understand that, you know, this is what they have, this is what the company's giving you, and that it's actually substantial enough so that a lot of people could afford to retire at that time. So, but just seeing them be able to have more confidence to make some decisions going forward and kind of shedding light and clarifying what those packages were going to do for them. Yes, it's been great.
Yeah, I think that certainly when an individual's at a career point, right, where they're being asked to take a package for whatever reason, you know, you've got a combination of emotion, you got a combination of the facts on the ground, you got the combination of the leaving an organization that has maybe been a family to them. Is, you know, we talk about that a lot in career coaching, that, you know, the work family is as powerful as your home family, and in some cases, maybe even more safe or more caring. And, this is fact, right? And so when somebody gets a big package of paper, it's very hard to go through that and look at it while you're running through the emotional trauma of everything that's happening, right? And so going to a professional or looking those things over and understanding them becomes critical.
Yes, definitely. It was good. I was able to share, you know, a lot of them were angry, and I was able to share the story of my dad with them. And, you know, I think that helped them see that, you know, they were in a much better position than some other people might have been, you know. So, you know, just helping them understand that, you know, the company kind of require, for whatever reason it is, they're not profitable, they need to cut overhead, they're just competing on a global stage of earnings reports for Wall Street every quarter, and if they're not meeting them, then, you know, the old phrase as it goes, heads are going to roll, right? You know, it's such a dynamic landscape in the world, corporate world, that yes, very emotional changes, those quick changes can definitely create emotions. And I think to be able to kind of block out the noise and just focus on the individual's unique situation at hand and help them make sense of it definitely can, you know, calm the fears, give them clarity and confidence to make some good decisions, well-informed, educated decisions going forward.
We're talking with Kevin O'Brien. He's the author of the book, The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, A Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, a news talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. We will be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Our guest today is the author of the new book, The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, A Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. We're talking with, of course, Kevin O'Brien. Kevin, you know, I guess one of the questions that always pops to mind when I talk to authors is, why did you write a book? Let's start with why did you just write a book in general? I mean, you've had a very good, obviously, career. You're doing very well in the financial sector. Writing a book's hard.
It was. I think, you know, having been doing this for 31 years, had a lot of experiences and have gained a lot of knowledge. And I wanted to put it down on paper before I forgot it all. No, it's kind of a good, I guess, exclamation point to my career, but not that I'm ready to roll out of this. I love what I do, and I can intend on being around a long time, God willing. But I felt compelled to write something that is pertinent to the people that we bring the most value to the table for. And as I looked at my clientele that we have here, and I wanted to see, you know, who do we bring the most value to the table for? And it became apparent it was for high-tech and biotech executives, upper managers, entrepreneurs. We've been able to help them make the most sense of their compensation plans, benefits packages, and, you know, just help them capitalize on the opportunities that the companies are giving them and make the most of those benefits and take advantage of them and help them understand the value of it too. You know, so sometimes we have career changers and, you know, we help them look at the total economic package of what they have today in light of what they might be looking at elsewhere. And, you know, each company's different in how they compensate the people with matching, different matching levels in the 401k, different health benefits, so on and so forth. And, you know, just helping them make good, you know, well-educated decisions when they transition out of one to the other. And making sure that they're getting what they expect or desire.
You know, it's interesting. You bring up the 401k. You bring up, obviously, individuals who are coming to you with their plans. You know, do you find that organizations, companies, provide really good information to their employees? And I guess I mean that by saying, is it I know there's the legal side. You have to provide all this data and all these legal required, all the paperwork. I understand that. But is it easy to understand? Could they do a better job, since we're talking to them right now, could they do a better job of explaining it all within the guidelines of not providing them? I mean, I know. I talk to HR people, and they sometimes are afraid to give advice, and they probably shouldn't give advice. But how do you balance that between the two, since you work with people like that?
I think, like you just mentioned, it's hard for the HR department. You don't want them giving specific investment advice, certainly, because that is going to put the company at risk or even that individual's career. So when they do sponsor a plan like that as a company sponsor, they should most likely be shifting the fiduciary responsibility to the advisor of the plan. And that advisor should be educating the participants on what the 401k can provide for them. And if the individuals are so inclined, they could either meet with that professional to further focus on their own personal needs, or get a referral from a friend or another professional like an accountant or attorney to a financial advisor, or if they feel educated enough, then they can do it on their own. But I think the main responsibility of the education should fall on the financial advisor to the plan, and that financial advisor should be a fiduciary to the plan.
So I understand that, but are there some simplistic ways that they can help encourage people? Because, I'll tell you, participation is good, but it's not great.
Yeah.
So how do you have that dialogue? And a lot of people do with financial advisors, but a lot of people don't. How do you have that dialogue?
Yep. Well, I think companies, and I know from our industry, financial services industry, we're trying to, help increase the participation rates. And, there are now mandatory participation. When you get hired by a company, you're participating in the plan unless you opt out of it. So that has helped to increase participation rates. But I think starting the dialogue is understanding that there is a whole focus now on financial wellness, and that's actually a benefit HR people can bring into the company, and that is just educational formats, kind of like lunch and learn topics that cover the basics of financial planning. So I think it starts right with just cash flow, knowing what's coming in and where it's going, trying to capture those discretionary dollars and redirect them to pay yourself first. That's critical, right? Paying yourself
absolutely
first.
Absolutely. Got to take care of you first.
Yeah. You got to pay yourself first, because it's amazing, when you're in your 20s or 30s, how little you have to start with, that, and it accumulates quite nicely, So just getting started, whether it be with your bank, just having it payroll deducted, and or the financial advisor at your company, or like I said, I think getting referrals from friends or coworkers or family members that are working with trusted advisors is a nice way. Most advisors will offer a complimentary consultation initially, and I think that's where you can maybe interview two or three of them and determine who you like and trust and felt that listen to you the best and understands what you want to get out of that relationship. That's probably a good way to start.
We're talking with Kevin O'Brien. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. Of course, he's the author of the book, The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, A Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. So I want to go back for just a second and talk about the biotech industry, because that, of course, is where you're very focused on. What are some of the risks in particular to the biotech industry, and what participants might be able to do to mitigate them?
Sure. I think the biggest risk is just the fact that only 10% of those preclinical therapies will be commercialized. So understanding the what's called the pipeline, which is how many potential therapeutics do they have in the pipeline? Obviously, the more they have, the better chances of them getting something commercialized, or maybe, you know, looking at a bigger company that is already well-established and has a pipeline of commercial drugs and therapeutics. But that is the biggest risk, the fact that if you're with a company that only has maybe one or two and they fail, they could go out of business. What we're seeing more so today is, you know, having a proof of viability before a lot of the bigger dollars come in. It's getting tougher to, you know, the proof of concept to get those bigger dollars. But, you know, what we see happening is big pharma coming in and licensing the therapies, or just becoming a partner and backing these companies up as they go through the phase one, phase two, phase three testing with the FDA. And those companies that have those partnerships or licensing agreements, you know, those are signs of more stability and possible success as well. So that is probably the number one risk, is the fact that the only 10% of these are actually marketable.
So when an individual goes to work for these organizations, what are some of the things that they should be asking for or talking about with, you know, HR and the organization to try to mitigate that risk?
Sure. I think what's really kind of neat about the biotech industry as I see it is it's actually a pretty small community, especially here, you know, in Massachusetts. So a lot of people know each other, and oftentimes the management teams that have left some of these big pharma companies and are starting out on their own, you know, the management teams are credible in some cases more so than others, and they have a track record of success. So I think understanding who's heading up those companies, what have they done in the past, what's their track record, the pipeline, what's in the pipeline, what are they looking at, you know, diseases that are at the forefront of what big pharma wants to combat and put money towards, you know, what type of therapies are they working on, and what areas of the life sciences landscape are they targeting, you know, are the therapeutics for big populations of people or not? Are they more of these what they call orphan type diseases that are smaller populations but, you know, need something that to help these people get healthy? I think between focusing on the management team's skills, track record, and the therapeutics themselves, you know, what are they trying to bring to market? How much depth is in the pipeline? Those are all important criteria for either a, you know, more stable company than not.
You're absolutely correct. It's something that everybody should be looking at, is really where's the background behind what they're doing, and how can you maximize those efforts. We're talking with Kevin O'Brien. He's the author of The Massachusetts Biotech Boom. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring local.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, our guest is Kevin O'Brien, and his book is called The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, A Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. You know, Kevin, I think one of the questions that people ask in general is having to do with their compensation, especially if they're an executive. And I know that since CMA does compensation plans, we often get asked by organizations about executive compensation plans, especially the use of stock-based plans, even phantom stock-based plans. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how to maximize those plans and how to use them properly?
Yep. So yes, it could come in the form of stock options. What we see today is more of a shift towards what are called restricted shares or restricted stock units. And the restricted shares are a little easier to manage than stock options. It's basically they're restricted until you become vested in them.
Can you give a little bit of definition of restricted? Like help the audience make sure they fully follow in that. So what is a restricted?
Sure. So a restricted stock is an award that's given to perhaps an executive and as they come on board, and basically it's shares of the company, but they're not vested in it right away. They can't sell it. It's restricted. And there's a vesting schedule to it, so they know that over time they're going to start vesting in this award. So, for instance, someone might get 1,000 shares of their company as restricted stock, and they'll vest, say, a quarter every year for the next 4 years. And in anticipation of that, they know that they're going to have a taxable event when they get vested in that tranche each year. Some of the ways to maximize the use of that is understanding the tax hit. You know, when you get vested in those shares, it's considered income. And there may be other things you can do in anticipation of that to mitigate the taxes on that vesting, such as other things that you have in your compensation plan at work, like deferred compensation plans, the 401k, being able to put, you know, reduce your taxable income on your pay stub as you know you're getting vested in these shares. That's, I think, a very important thing to do, so you're not kind of getting a double tax hit unnecessarily if you can afford that. And that's one way. The others, you know, with the stock options, I think having a divesting plan ahead of time and sticking to it makes the most sense rather than waiting to the end. Like, so stock options, these are options to buy your company's stock at a certain price, and you have generally about 10 years to exercise those options, meaning actually buy the stock at that stated price. And sometimes we see people wait until the 10 years are up, and maybe they're going to make money, maybe they're not. That's why we think it's important to have a plan along the way, so that each year, at least once a year, you're looking at the valuation of the underlying company in relation to the stock options and seeing if it makes sense to exercise them and sell them, or exercise and hold them, or you know, there's certain things that you can do with that, different ways of exercising them as well. So, you know, that's where people need to be educated on how they can exercise them and understanding how it can complement their personal financial goals. And what does it mean? Like, if how significant or not is that stock to their personal financial plans? How important is it going to be to capture some of that potential profit to complement and enhance their goals? Are they able to meet their goals without it, and it's not as important, or is it vital? You know, and that's where I think having a plan, understanding how it fits into your overall goals and objectives, and then sticking with it, having a discipline to take some chips off the table based on where the company is at any given point in time. Is it overvalued? Is it undervalued? So we use certain metrics, valuation metrics, to determine if we should take, you know, more or less off the table at any given point in time.
You're talking about goal setting and planning, obviously, for someone's financial future.
Yeah.
Do you do any work with organizations, or do you believe that organizations should have somebody come in and talk to their employees? What responsibility does a company organization have in making sure that their employees are financially sound?
Yeah, so the stock plan services are what is generally overseeing the stock options and restricted shares, and they have individuals that could educate the participants on those plans, certainly taking that risk, I guess, or just taking that fiduciary responsibility away from the employer and kind of being that objective third party to educate people on what they have. That, I think, makes a lot of sense. Again, the HR people certainly are competent and can help educate them as well. To a point, again, not wanting to give them specific investment advice because that probably takes on, you know, exposes the company to undue risk.
Sure. No, I understand that. And, of course, we're talking with Kevin O'Brien. He's the author of the book, The Massachusetts Biotech Boom. You know, somebody's now at the end of their career, or maybe they're thinking of moving on, or maybe they recognize an organization is maybe struggling more than they want, and they're thinking about an exit strategy. What are some tips you could give them in terms of knowing when the right time is financially for an exit strategy?
The longer you can plan ahead, then the more prepared you'll be when it comes to that time, right? We dealt with a lot of people who are getting those offers unexpectedly. But if you are in a position where you can say, yeah, I'd like to retire in X number of years, then, you know, you can focus wholeheartedly on that goal and know, you know, what is it going to, how much do you need for income when you're no longer working? You know, that's how do you replace that income that you're normally getting? And do you have enough resources at hand, you know, to do so? And is it going to fit within that time horizon that you desire to have it happen? And so that's where I know with us, we help kind of eliminate a lot of that guesswork and help people get that clarity and understanding as to what they need to be doing today to have that target established and hit with some reasonable expectations. So the longer that you plan for it, I think the higher the probability is that it's going to happen the way you desire it to. If it's something that comes up unexpectedly, you've been downsized or you've been offered an early retirement package, you know, that's where you need to assess. You know, if you decide to take a retirement package, do you still have to work? Oftentimes, you know, we saw that people didn't have to go back out and make the same level of income that they were making before, and that they had enough resources to accept something of a, you know, not as demanding type of position, therefore not as highly compensated, but still enough to bridge that gap. Or, you know, maybe they can afford to do it there and then. But there's a lot of things that people can do to acclimate their lifestyle to their resources as well. And, you know, are they willing to do that or not is the question, right?
Well, that is always the question, because human behavior and habits are hard to break sometimes. But you know what? That makes us all unique, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And yeah, everybody's situation is different. And, you know, some people want to continue to work forever. And I applaud that. I think it's good to keep busy. It's good to have decent horizon in front of you to plan. And then also when you do get to that end stage where you want to exit and you know you can successfully, it's also good to have a plan on what type of lifestyle you want to lead in retirement. How do you want to spend your time? Because you're going to have a lot more of it. And, you know, the hobbies, the interests, there's so many different things. As you know, retirement has been redefined with the baby boomers. It's not their parents' retirement, where the previous generation, I guess maybe the World War II generation, they would be, you know, a lot of them retired with a pension, guaranteed income for life, along with Social Security, but they didn't live as long either. Today, you know, the baby boomers, most of them are dependent upon their 401k to provide the majority of their income. You know, Social Security is changing, later ages for full retirement, different claiming strategies. People need to know what they're going to be faced with after work, right? And how the health plans work, Medicare and things. So very dynamic. It's a lot going on. And I think it's good to get some advice. It's good to go to some of these workshops and learn and see what's out there and use the resources that your company is providing you. The HR people are, you know, great resource to talk to. If they can't, you know, give you the specific advice, I'm sure they may have people they can refer you to, or bring people in to do these financial wellness workshops, lunch and learn type things. But and there's so much content online, you just got to be careful that it's, you know, reputable and accurate.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest challenge, isn't it, Kevin? There's no question. There's almost too much online. And you do have to be careful. And again, we're talking with Kevin O'Brien. He's the author of the book, The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, The Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. And of course, we've been talking not only about the book, but we have also been talking about keeping your wealth intact. So we're talking with Kevin. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love
waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, our guest is Kevin O'Brien, and of course, I'm your host, David Shulo, and we're talking about his book, The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, A Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. Kevin, it's been a great conversation today, and as we wrap up here in the last couple minutes of the show, you have five things that you thought would be really good wrap-up to talk about in terms of the book. And so it's your show right now. You got 2.5 minutes. Go.
All right. So number one, the book basically gives you a good idea of the landscape and the ecosystem of the Massachusetts biotech industry and life sciences. So if you're interested in a career, or you're already in a career and you're looking to kind of navigate it, I believe the book can help you do exactly that, understanding the different networks and non-governmental organizations that are available to network in and meet people. That's what it's all about. It boils down to meeting people who you know and who knows them and whatnot, and getting out there and shaking some hands and talking to people, and it works out quite well. And one of the organizations that facilitates a lot of that is called the Mass Bio. Mass Bio is based in Cambridge. They have over 1,000 biotech companies as members and other affiliated service organizations. They have so many different events and gatherings for people to get together and meet and talk and, you know, get to know each other and network. So that is very helpful. The other area we have there is we have our 5-step wealth management process defined in the book, and that shows people the process that we adhere to and begins with a complimentary consultation. Given the opportunity, we take a step back and analyze people's investment plans in light of what they're trying to accomplish, their goals, objectives, time horizons. How tax efficient is the portfolio? How cost effective is it? Is it going to, you know, what's the probability of it going to meet their needs and objectives? So we come back after that and talk in detail how we can enhance that picture. Again, make it more cost effective, tax efficient, and maybe a better risk adjusted approach. And once we implement that, we know we've been hired and we can go to work, and we start working with our other professionals as needed, like estate planning attorneys and CPAs that we have in our own professional network. And we're able to brainstorm and collaborate with these people, all inclusive of our services. So we get advanced planning advice from these professionals, ancillary to our services. And then our clients can either utilize the professional network of people we're working with, or we can work directly with their professionals if they're inclined to want to do so. And then we want to meet periodically, a couple times a year, just to reassess the portfolio, reassess the goals, objectives, do some reprojections to make sure people are on track. So it's a nice ongoing dynamic process that creates a trusting relationship, and you have somebody that's constantly keeping their finger on the pulse of the investment, economic, and tax situations, and then you periodically, being able to sit down with that individual and block out the noise and focus on your own kind of micro economy, right? Your own situation. Oftentimes what's happening out in the headlines and on the TV is not as adversely affecting our clients as it sounds, when you say the sound bites out there. So, really getting a better, understanding as to what's really happening with your own unique situation is really important when all the hype and noise is going on out there, to just focus on your own unique situation with some, reasonable expectations and make some well-educated, informed, rational decisions.
We don't want people doing knee-jerk emotional reactions to market swings and whatnot. So that's all spelled out in the book. Another concept that I think is important is understanding your human capital, and that's defined in the book. The human capital is how you derive your wealth, whether it be your income, assets, and so on. So human capital, if you're working in a startup and a lot of your income is and compensation is equity-based, stock-based compensation, you're probably going to want to invest your own money more conservatively. On the other hand, if you or your spouse or a significant other is working for a state government entity, their human capital is more bond-like. They're more consistent. They're going to get their cost of living adjustments probably each year. It's pretty reassured that they're going to have a job if they, don't do something crazy. So that's more bond-like. So they can afford to invest more aggressively. So, understanding your human capital is, I think, essential to constructing an appropriate portfolio that complements that.
There's no question that organizations have so much to think about. People have so much to think about when you're talking about investments and financial issues. I want to thank you so much, Kevin, for being on the show today. Again, it's Kevin O'Brien. The book is The Massachusetts Biotech Boom, A Guide for Executives and Entrepreneurs. I appreciate you being on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, David. I appreciate being here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Remember, you can go to hrpowerhour.com right after this show. Kevin's information will be there. We'll have a link to his book. And hopefully we encourage you to go out and purchase it. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk, WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, I'm Richard Moon from Verrill. This week's Tip of the Week is you need to decide who you're going to recall when you start to reopen. You need a system, an approach that you can explain to third parties. Will it be based on volunteers? And if it's based on volunteers, will you randomly select from those volunteers? Will it be the most senior people in a position that you call back first? Or the most qualified? And if you're going to use most qualified, how do you determine that? Will it be job evaluations, some sort of assessed job description? Will it be last out? Perhaps your most senior people, and so they're first back. Whatever system you're going to be using, you need to be able to explain it to your employees and to third parties who may evaluate your choices, and particularly plaintiff's lawyers who may challenge why you're bringing back somebody instead of somebody else.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.